miles as the crow flies, and maybe 20 as the wolf runs," answered Gandalf grimly. "Then let us start as soon as it's light tomorrow, if we can," said Boromir. "The wolf that one hears is worse than the orc that one fears." "True," said Aragorn, loosening his sword in its sheath. "But where the warg howls, there also the orc prowls."
"I wish I'd taken Elrond's advice," muttered Pippin to Sam. "I'm no good after all. There's not enough of the breed of Bandobras the bull-roarer in me. These howls freeze my blood. I don't ever remember feeling so wretched."
"My heart's right down in my toes, Mr. Pippin," said Sam. "But we aren't etten yet, and there are some stout folk here with us. Whatever may be in store for old Gandalf, I'll wager it isn't a wolf's belly." For their defence in the night, the company climbed to the top of the small hill under which they had been sheltering. It was crowned with a knot of old and twisted trees, about which lay a broken circle of boulder stones. In the midst of this they lit a fire, for there was no hope that darkness and silence would keep their trail from discovery by the hunting packs. Round the fire they sat, and those that were not on guard dozed uneasily. Poor Bill the pony trembled and sweated where he stood. The howling of the wolves was now all round them, sometimes nearer and sometimes further off. In the dead of the night many shining eyes were seen peering over the brow of the hill. Some advanced almost to the ring of stones. At a gap in the circle, a great dark wolf shape could be seen halted, gazing at them. A shuddering howl broke from him, as if he were a captain summoning his pack to the assault. Gandalf stood up and strode forward, holding his staff aloft.
"Listen, hound of Sauron," he cried. "Gandalf is here. Fly if you value your foul skin. I will shrivel you from tail to snout if you come within this ring."
The wolf snarled and sprang towards them with a great leap. At that moment there was a sharp twang. Legolas had loosed his bow. There was a hideous yell, and the leaping shape thudded to the ground. The elvish arrow had pierced its throat. The watching eyes were suddenly extinguished. Gandalf and Aragorn strode forward, but the hill was deserted. The hunting packs had fled. All about them the darkness grew silent, and no cry came on the sighing wind. The night was old, and westward the waning moon was setting, gleaming fitfully through the breaking clouds. Suddenly Frodo started from sleep. Without warning, a storm of howls broke out fierce and wild all about the camp. A great host of wargs had gathered silently and was now attacking them from every side at once.
"Fling fuel on the fire," cried Gandalf to the hobbits. "Draw your blades and stand back to back."
In the leaping light, as the fresh wood blazed up, Frodo saw many grey shapes spring over the ring of stones. More and more followed. Through the throat of one huge leader, Aragorn passed his sword with a thrust. With a great sweep, Boromir hewed the head off another. Beside them, Gimli stood with his stout legs apart, wielding his dwarf axe. In the wavering firelight, Gandalf seemed suddenly to grow. He rose up, a great menacing shape like the monument of some ancient king of stone set upon a hill. Stooping like a cloud, he lifted a burning branch and strode to meet the wolves. They gave back before him. High in the air he tossed the blazing brand. It flared with a sudden white radiance like lightning, and his voice rolled like thunder.
"Nar Arnedraith Armin, Nar Dungarhoth," he cried.
There was a roar and a crackle, and the tree above him burst into a leaf and bloom of blinding flame. The fire leapt from treetop to treetop. The whole hill was crowned with dazzling light. The swords and knives of the defenders shone and flickered. The last arrow of Legolas kindled in the air as it flew and plunged, burning into the heart of a great wolf chieftain. All the others fled. Slowly the fire died, till nothing was left but falling ash and sparks. A bitter smoke curled above the burned tree stumps and blew darkly from the hill, as the first light of dawn came dimly in the sky. Their enemies were routed and did not return.
"What did I tell you, Mr. Pippin?" said Sam, sheathing his sword. "Wolves won't get him."
"That was an eye-opener and no mistake. Nearly singed the hair off my head."
When the full light of the morning came, no signs of the wolves were to be found, and they looked in vain for the bodies of the dead. No trace of the fight remained but the charred trees and the arrows of Legolas lying on the hilltop. All were undamaged, save one of which only the point was left.
"It is as I feared," said Gandalf. "They were no ordinary wolves hunting for food in the wilderness. Let us eat quickly and go."
That day the weather changed again, almost as if it was at the command of some power that had no longer any use for snow, since they had retreated from the pass, a power that wished now to have a clear light in which things that moved in the wild could be seen from far away. The wind had been turning through north to northwest during the night, and now it failed. The clouds vanished southwards, and the sky was opened high and blue. As they stood upon the hillside, ready to depart, a pale sunlight gleamed over the mountaintops.
"We must reach the doors before sunset," said Gandalf, "or I fear we shall not reach them at all. It's not far, but our path may be winding, for here Aragorn cannot guide us. He has seldom walked in this country, and only once have I been under the west wall of Moria, and that was long ago." "There it lies," he said, pointing away south-eastwards to where the mountain's sides fell sheer into the shadows at their feet. In the distance could be dimly seen a line of bare cliffs, and in their midst, taller than the rest, one great grey wall.
"When we left the pass, I led you southwards, and not back to our starting point, as some of you may have noticed. It's well that I did so, for now we have several miles less to cross, and haste is needed. Let us go."
"I do not know which to hope," said Boromir grimly, "that Gandalf will find what he seeks, or that coming to the cliff we shall find the gates lost for ever. All choices seem ill, and to be caught between wolves and the wall the likeliest chance. Lead on."
Gimli now walked ahead by the wizard's side, so eager was he to come to Moria. Together they led the company back towards the mountains. The only road of old to Moria from the west had lain along the course of a stream, the Cirannon, that ran out from the feet of the cliffs near where the doors had stood. But either Gandalf was astray, or else the land had changed in recent years, for he did not strike the stream where he looked to find it, only a few miles southwards from their start. The morning was passing towards noon, and still the company wandered and scrambled in a barren country of red stones. Nowhere could they see any gleam of water or hear any sound of it. All was bleak and dry. Their heart sank. They saw no living thing, and not a bird was in the sky. But what the night would bring, if it caught them in that lost land, none of them cared to think. Suddenly Gimli, who had pressed on ahead, called back to them. He was standing on a knoll and pointing to the right. Hurrying up, they saw below them a deep and narrow channel. It was empty and silent, and hardly a trickle of water flowed among the brown and red-stained stones of its bed. But on the near side there was a path, much broken and decayed, that wound its way among the ruined walls and paving stones of an ancient high road.
"Ah, here it is at last," said Gandalf. "This is where the stream ran. Cirannon, the gate stream, they used to call it. But what has happened to the water, I cannot guess. It used to be swift and noisy. Come, we must hurry on. We are late."
The company were footsore and tired, but they trudged doggedly along the rough and winding track for many miles. The sun turned from the noon and began to go west. After a brief halt and a hasty meal, they went on again. Before them the mountains frowned, but their path lay in a deep trough of land, and they could see only the higher shoulders and the far eastward peaks. At length they came to a sharp bend. There the road, which had been veering southwards between the brink of the channel and a steep fall of the land to the left, turned and went due east again. Rounding the corner, they saw before them a low cliff, some 5 fathoms high, with a broken and jagged top. Over it a trickling water dripped through a wide cleft that seemed to have been carved out by a fall that had once been strong and full.
"Indeed, things have changed," said Gandalf, "but there's no mistaking the place. There is all the remains of the stair falls. If I remember right, there was a flight of steps cut in the rock at their side, but the main road wound away left and climbed with several loops up to the level ground at the top. There used to be a shallow valley beyond the falls right up to the walls of Moria, and the Ciranon flowed through it with the road beside it. Let us go and see what things are like now."
They found the stone steps without difficulty, and Gimli sprang swiftly up them, followed by Gandalf and Frodo. When they reached the top, they saw that they could go no further that way, and the reason for the drying up of the gate stream was revealed. Behind them the sinking sun filled the cool western sky with glimmering gold. Before them stretched a dark, still lake. Neither sky nor sunset was reflected on its sullen surface. The Ciranon had been dammed and had filled all the valley. Beyond the ominous water were reared vast cliffs, their stern faces pallid in the fading light, final and impassable. No sign of gate or entrance, nor a fissure or crack could Frodo see in the frowning wall.
"There are the walls of Moria," said Gandalf, pointing across the water, "and there the gate stood once upon a time, the elven door at the end of the road from Holin, by which we've come. But this way is blocked. None of the company, I guess, will wish to swim this gloomy water at the end of the day. It has an unwholesome look."
"We must find a way round the northern edge," said Gimli. "The first thing for the company to do is to climb up by the main path and see where that will lead us. Even if there were no lake, we could not get our baggage pony up this stair."
"But in any case, we cannot take the poor beast into the mines," said Gandalf. "The road under the mountains is a dark road, and there are places narrow and steep which he cannot tread, even if we can."
"Poor old Bill," said Frodo. "I hadn't thought of that. And poor Sam, I wonder what he'll say."
"I'm sorry," said Gandalf. "Poor Bill has been a useful companion, and it goes to my heart to turn him adrift now. I would have travelled lighter and brought no animal, least of all this one that Sam is fond of. If I had had my way, I feared all along that we should be obliged to take this road." The day was drawing to its end, and cold stars were glinting in the sky high above the sunset, when the company, with all the speed they could, climbed up the slopes and reached the side of the lake. In breadth it looked to be no more than 2 or 3 furlongs at the widest point. How far it stretched away southward they could not see in the failing light, but its northern end was no more than 1/2 mile from where they stood, and between the stony ridges that enclosed the valley and the water's edge there was a rim of open ground. They hurried forward, for they had still 1 or 2 to go before they could reach the point on the far shore that Gandalf was making for, and then he had still to find the doors. When they came to the northernmost corner of the lake, they found a narrow creek that barred their way. It was green and stagnant, thrust out like a slimy arm towards the enclosing hills. Gimli strode forward undeterred and found that the water was shallow, no more than 1 ankle deep at the edge. Behind him they walked in file, threading their way with care, for under the weedy pools were sliding and greasy stones, and footing was treacherous. Frodo shuddered with disgust at the touch of the dark, unclean water on his feet. As Sam, the last of the company, led Bill up onto the dry ground on the far side, there came a soft sound, a swish, followed by a plop, as if a fish had disturbed the still surface of the water. Turning quickly, they saw ripples,
black-edged with shadow in the waning light. Great rings were widening outwards from a point far out in the lake. There was a bubbling noise and then silence. The dusk deepened, and the last gleams of the sunset were veiled in cloud. Gandalf now pressed on at a great pace, and the others followed as quickly as they could. They reached the strip of land between the lake and the cliffs. It was narrow, often hardly a dozen yards across, and unencumbered with fallen rocks and stones. But they found a way, hugging the cliff, and keeping as far from the dark water as they might. A mile southwards along the shore they came upon holly trees. Stumps and dead boughs were rotting in the shallows, the remains, it seemed, of old thickets, or of a hedge that had once lined the road across the drowned valley. But close under the cliff there stood, still strong and living, two tall trees, larger than any trees of holly that Frodo had ever seen or imagined. Their great roots spread from the wall to the water. Under the looming cliffs they had looked like mere bushes when seen far off from the top of the stair, but now they towered overhead, stiff, dark, and silent, throwing deep night shadows about their feet, standing like sentinel pillars at the end of the road.
"Well, here we are at last," said Gandalf.
Here the elven way from Holin ended. Holly was the token of the people of that land, and they planted it here to mark the end of their domain, for the west door was made chiefly for their use in their traffic with the lords of Moria. Those were happier days, when there was still close friendship at times between folk of different race, even between dwarves and elves.
"It was not the fault of the dwarves that the friendship waned," said Gimli.
"I have not heard that it was the fault of the elves," said Legolas.
"I have heard both," said Gandalf, "and I will not give judgment now, but I beg you two, Legolas and Gimli, at least to be friends and to help me. I need you both. The doors are shut and hidden, and the sooner we find them, the better. Night is at hand."
Turning to the others, he said,
"While I'm searching, will you each make ready to enter the mines? For here, I fear, we must say farewell to our good beast of burden. You must lay aside much of the stuff that we brought against bitter weather. You will not need it inside, nor, I hope, when we come through and journey on down into the south. Instead, each of us must take a share of what the pony carried, especially the food and the water skins."
"But you can't leave poor old Bill behind in this forsaken place, Mr. Gandalf," cried Sam, angry and distressed. "I won't have it, and that's flat. After he's come so far and all."
"I'm sorry, Sam," said the wizard, "but when the doors open, I don't think you'll be able to drag your Bill inside into the long dark of Moria. You'll have to choose between Bill and your master."
"He'd follow Mr. Frodo into a dragon's den if I led him," protested Sam. "It'd be nothing short of murder to turn him loose with all these wolves about."
"It will be short of murder, I hope," said Gandalf. He laid his hand on the pony's head and spoke in a low voice. "Go with words of guard and guiding on you," he said. "You're a wise beast and have learned much in Rivendell. Make your ways to places where you can find grass, and so come in time to Elrond's house or wherever you wish to go. There, Sam, you'll have quite as much chance of escaping wolves and getting home as we have."
Sam stood sullenly by the pony and returned no answer. Bill, seeming to understand well what was going on, nuzzled up to him, putting his nose to Sam's ear. Sam burst into tears and fumbled with the straps, unlading all the pony's packs and throwing them on the ground. The other sorted out the goods, making a pile of all that could be left behind and dividing up the rest. When this was done, they turned to watch Gandalf. He appeared to have done nothing. He was standing between the two trees, gazing at the blank wall of the cliff, as if he would bore a hole into it with his eyes. Gimli was wandering about, tapping the stone here and there with his axe. Legolas was pressed against the rock, as if listening.
"Well, here we are and all ready," said Merry. "But where are the doors? I can't see any sign of them.
Dwarf doors are not made to be seen when shut, said Gimli. They are invisible, and their own